জয়ং বিষ্ণুপাদ পরমহংস পরিব্রাজকাচার্য অষ্টোত্তর শত শ্রী শ্রীমদ ভক্তি সিদ্ধান্ত সরস্বতী ঠাকুর কি জয়। অনন্ত কোটি বৈষ্ণব বৃন্দ কি জয়। নামাচার্য শিল হরিদাস ঠাকুর কি জয়। প্রেম সে কহ শ্রীকৃষ্ণ চৈতন্য প্রভু নিত্যানন্দ শ্রী অদ্বৈত গদাধর শিবাসাদি গৌর ভক্ত বৃন্দ কি জয়। শ্রী শ্রী রাধা কৃষ্ণ গোপ গোপীনাথ শ্যাম কুণ্ড রাধা কুণ্ড গিরি গোবর্ধন কি জয়। শ্রী বৃন্দাবন ধাম কি জয়। শ্রী মথুরা ধাম কি জয়। শ্রী জগন্নাথ পুরী ধাম কি জয়। শ্রী মায়াপুর নবদ্বীপ ধাম কি জয়। গঙ্গা মাই কি জয়। যমুনা মাই কি জয়। ভক্তি দেবী কি জয়। তুলসী মহারানী কি জয়। হরিনাম সংকীর্তন কি জয়। সমবেত ভক্ত বৃন্দ কি জয়। গৌর প্রেমানন্দে হরি হরি বোল। অল গ্লোরিজ টু দ্য অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিজ। অল গ্লোরিজ টু দ্য অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিজ। অল গ্লোরিজ টু দ্য অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিজ। অল গ্লোরিজ টু শ্রী গুরু অ্যান্ড শ্রী গৌরাঙ্গ। অল গ্লোরিজ টু শ্রীল প্রভুপাদ। নমো বিষ্ণুপদায় কৃষ্ণপৃষ্ঠায় ভূতলে শ্রীমতে ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী নীতি নামিনে নমস্তে সরস্বতী দেবে গৌরবাণী প্রচারিণে নির্বিশেষ শূন্যবাদী পাশ্চাত্য দেশ। হরে কৃষ্ণ। আই ফিল ভেরি ফর্চুনেট টু বি এবল টু কাম হিয়ার টুডে। ইটস ভেরি এনলাইভেনিং টু সি সো মেনি সিনিয়র গড ব্রাদার্স অ্যান্ড ইন আ ওয়ে ইট মেক্স মি আ লিটল এম্বারাসড to speak also, because in front of my senior god brothers I should rather be listening than speaking, and also I feel a little guilty that I just came straight to this class. Rather, I should have come earlier and associated with you all first before just sitting straight in the Vyasasana and start to speak. Anyway, please forgive me for all my defects and all my offenses, and please bless me that I can properly glorify Srila Prabhupada today. I had been hearing a lot about Alachua community, how wonderfully it is growing, and ISKCON needed a place like this where devotees would get together and cultivate their Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees, where they will support each other in their spiritual endeavor and continue to glorify Srila Prabhupada through their words and thoughts and action. And I wholeheartedly wish all success to this community, and I look forward to the association of you all for next few days. Hare Krishna. The topic that we have selected to discuss about is Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder Acharya. I personally heard Srila Prabhupada in few occasions emphasizing this point. Once Srila Prabhupada told Tamakrishna Maharaj and few other senior devotees who were there that wherever there would be the mention of the word ISKCON, whether it is on a letterhead or in a plaque, Prabhupada's name should be there underneath ISKCON as the founder Acharya. And in this way, this was made into a resolution that wherever ISKCON's name would be mentioned, Srila Prabhupada's name as the founder Acharya should come underneath that. And I recall another incident in Bombay. Article came into a popular newspaper there about ISKCON temple that was being constructed, the Juhu temple. It was a nice, quite a large article, and the devotee who was speaking to the reporter did not mention Srila Prabhupada's name as the founder Acharya. And Srila Prabhupada was very upset about that. Srila Prabhupada called that devotee and Srila Prabhupada chastised him. I was a very new devotee at that time, very new in the movement, and I was rather surprised that why Srila Prabhupada was, apparently Srila Prabhupada was so, not only apparently, obviously Srila Prabhupada was so detached from any personal aggrandizement. Srila Prabhupada was so detached from any name and fame, but I was wondering why Srila Prabhupada was so concerned about his name as the founder Acharya. Of course, later on, I began to realize why Srila Prabhupada was so emphatic about that point. And that is what I want to share with you all. And I also would like to have your input in this discussion. So when we say founder Acharya, obviously it implies that he is the founder and the Acharya of an institution. Like when we say Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, naturally we do not imply that Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya of Gaudiya Math, or Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya or Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. When we use the expression founder Acharya, it automatically implies that Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the institution that he himself founded. And he is the spiritual head or the Acharya of that institution. So the founder aspect of it is natural. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. No one will contest that fact. But what is important for us to recognize is that Srila Prabhupada is the spiritual head of this institution. And that is the meaning of the word founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of a spiritual institution, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada will always remain the spiritual head of this institution. And a few years ago, 3 years ago, the governing body, the GBC, passed a resolution in that spirit, which implied that Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru of all devotees of ISKCON for all time. Now, this is actually establishing, this resolution is establishing Srila Prabhupada's position in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent spiritual head. Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru, not only for his disciples or those who had direct contact with him, but Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent spiritual master of Shiksha Guru of all devotees for all time in ISKCON. Whoever joins ISKCON, no matter when, as long as ISKCON is there, those who will join ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada will be the preeminent Shiksha Guru of those devotees. Now here, another important thing that we can consider is that the line that we belong to, the line of Gauriya, Vaishnav line, especially the line of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is not a line of Diksha Parampara. It is Bhagavat Parampara, which is based on Shiksha. Like if we see our spiritual line, we see many of the individuals, although they have been designated as the disciples of certain individuals, not necessarily they were the Diksha disciples of those individuals. For example, say Narottam Das Thakur was not a Diksha disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was not a Diksha disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami. Baladev Vidyabhushan was not a Diksha disciple of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And in this way, Bhakti Vinod Thakur was not a Diksha disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And it goes on like that. Also, just before that, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was not a Diksha disciple of Baladev Vidyabhushan. So it is not, our line is not a line of Diksha Parampara. And because of that, some people in India criticize our line and say that our line, our disciplic succession is not bona fide. Whoever has gone to Radha Kund and had some encounters with some Babajis there, they have this experience. They very adamantly, very vehemently protest that your line is not bona fide. Of course, whenever I have encounters with them, I give them one argument. Actually, they are not prepared to listen to this finer, subtle details, why our parampara is bona fide, the way Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is established. But one point I always present to them, I ask them whether they accept that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world. So they accept that point. Yes, Mahaprabhu made that prediction. And my point is that the prediction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made, which is actually an impossible prediction. 500 years ago, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Krishna consciousness movement would spread in every town and village. And now, the person who fulfills that prediction, is he in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or not? And most of the time they shut up. They don't have any argument. And so, in this way, we can see that the line that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur drew was actually a line of Bhagavat Parampara, which is based on Shiksha, not the formality of diksha. Wherever the shiksha or the spiritual potency is flowing, wherever the teachings is flowing, there is the line. Not according to the formality of by whom one has been initiated. And when you look at it, then it becomes very clear that, say, when while Bhakti Vinod Thakur had been initiated by one Goswami, who was actually a caste Goswami, Bipin Bihari Goswami, he was a Diksha Guru, but Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur drew the line through Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Why? Because he saw that how his father was influenced by the teachings of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He was not concerned about where he took the diksha. If the teachings is not there, then what's the point? What's the importance of that diksha? And that way it goes all the way back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so now we can see that our line is based on Shiksha, and Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru of all the devotees of ISKCON for all time. Now what does this GBC resolution actually imply? That Srila Prabhupada is going to be the spiritual head or the spiritual master for all the devotees of ISKCON for all time. And here we are, Srila Prabhupada gave us his books, and he very emphatically pointed out that his books are the basis. His books are the basis. His books are the foundation of ISKCON. And we also, whenever we have any doubt about certain conclusion, our immediate concern or consideration is it there in Srila Prabhupada's books? What did Srila Prabhupada say about this in his books? And that is our main concern. If it is in Prabhupada's books, it's bona fide. If it's not in Prabhupada's books, or if it is not tallying with Srila Prabhupada's instructions in his books, we don't accept it. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada's books or Srila Prabhupada's teachings are the foundation or the basis of ISKCON. So, while we speak about Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder Acharya, the most important point that we actually consider in this respect is the position of Srila Prabhupada as the Acharya, the preeminent Shiksha Guru of all devotees of ISKCON for all time. That actually means whoever joins ISKCON, he gets an opportunity to become connected to Srila Prabhupada. He has a link with Srila Prabhupada. He has a connection with Srila Prabhupada, even though that connection may not be physical, even though that connection may not be direct. But it doesn't matter. Our process is the via medium, the transparent via media. And it is through this via media that we become connected to Srila Prabhupada. And the devotees who join ISKCON will continue to be connected to Srila Prabhupada through this via media. And that's why this title, Srila Prabhupada, also is so important. Prabhupada, the title actually implies that at whose feet all the gurus sit, all the prabhus sit. It is not that there won't be any spiritual masters or spiritual teachers or spiritual guides after Srila Prabhupada, but all in ISKCON will sit at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. All will transmit Srila Prabhupada's teachings, Srila Prabhupada's instructions to those who are guiding and teaching. Now, the next point that we want to consider, that now that we establish Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, or ISKCON, what is the importance of a spiritual institution? Many people often contest this need. Many of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples also had this dilemma. What is the need of a spiritual institution, or what is the need of an institutionalized religion? They were opposed to, and even today we come across many individuals, those who are opposed to this institutionalized religion or spiritual movement. Now, in order to understand this point, we have to go back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world, in every town and village. Now, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this prediction, it's bound to come true. It's bound to come true. It's going to happen. If Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then his words will not go in vain. And actually, through these kind of predictions, the world will recognize Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Mahaprabhu said it, no matter how impossible it sounds, it is going to happen. And when we see the progress of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, when we consider the history of Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, then we notice that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was here, he spread this movement throughout India, throughout the subcontinent of India. And it spread throughout, literally throughout the land of India, it spread. But Mahaprabhu made a prediction that it would not only remain within India, but it will spread all over the world. And it's interesting to note that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this prediction 500 years ago, when people didn't actually know how many continents were there, what to speak of towns and villages. They didn't even know how many continents were there. Columbus at that time just discovered America. Australia was completely unknown. So at a time like that, Mahaprabhu makes a prediction that it would spread all over the world, in every town and village, where practically there was no communication with the outside world. And then we notice that sometime after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, Krishna consciousness movement, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, practically got lost. Only in some isolated corners of Vrindavan and Navadvip, some Bhajanandi Vaishnavs, like Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Baladev Buddha Bhushan, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, were maintaining the pure teachings of Sri, pure line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But otherwise, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement was completely eclipsed by the upper sampradayas. So much so that no cultured, educated person wanted to have anything to do with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Because what was going on in the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by these upper sampradayas, was extremely unpalatable. Not only unpalatable, it was actually disgusting. It won't be a mistake to say that their practices were based on breaking the four regulative principles. So that is why Mahaprabhu's teachings are practically lost. And around that time, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur appeared. And he started to revive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And when Bhakti Vinod Thakur started his preaching, he couldn't find a single Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakti Ratnakar. All these books were lost. Although Bhakti Vinod Thakur was an extremely influential person, but still he could not find a single copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. After a lot of endeavor, after a lot of effort, he finally found one handwritten copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that also he found not in Bengal, but in Orissa. So we can see what was the state of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement at that time. And then Bhakti Vinod Thakur started to print Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita with his own purport, called Amrita Prabaha Bhashya, the nectarian flow of commentary and conclusion. So, it is Bhakti Vinod Thakur who actually started the revival of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a very high-ranking government officer, was naturally extremely busy, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur did not have enough time to do the to effectively establish this Krishna consciousness movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he prayed to Lord Jagannath to send him an able assistant. And as a result of his prayer, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually started to spread Krishna consciousness according to the plans of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And it was not easy. He faced a lot of obstacles and difficulties at that time. So much so that his own brother turned against him. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually had to ask him to leave. He drove him out of the temple because he was causing so much disturbance in his establishment of Krishna consciousness the way he wanted. And that it's interesting to note that his brother did not accept, his own brother actually did not accept the line of disciplic succession and the teachings and the siddhantas that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was establishing. And in this way there was a lot of misunderstanding. Anyway, that is not our point to discuss. So I will just skip that and continue with the main objective of our discussion, to understand Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder acharya of a spiritual institution, ISKCON. So we notice Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur both gave a lot of emphasis to an institution. Although they themselves are very powerful spiritual personalities, when we consider their spiritual identity, then we can see that both of them actually came from Krishna's eternal pastimes. Both of them are actually eternal associates of Radha Krishna. But they are emphatically establishing the importance of an institution. Bhakti Vinod Thakur formally could not establish the institution, but he gave the blueprint of an institution through his Namhat. He gave that how the Vaishnava society should be structured. And then, according to that blueprint, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established his Gauriya Math. Although he didn't use the same name as Namhat, but it is actually according to that blueprint that he established, that Gauriya Math. And he gave an absolute importance to that institution. So much so that before leaving the planet, his only concern was that his disciples continue the mission collectively through this institution, by managing the institution through a governing body. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't mention anything about who would be the successor to his mission. He did not name anybody as such, that such and such person would become the successor. But rather he instructed that you maintain this mission through a governing body. But unfortunately, many of his leading disciples could not recognize the importance of continuing the mission through an institution, through a governing body. They actually considered that how can a spiritual institution be maintained by a group of managers? And as a result of that, as a result of not recognizing the importance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instructions, they appointed one acharya. They felt that a spiritual institution must have a spiritual head. And when that acharya fell down, the structure collapsed. And although many of them maintained their spiritual life, there were many of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples maintained their spiritual life. They had their ashram, they had their maths, they had their spiritual programs, they were making disciples. But the preaching actually stopped because the institution was not there. In Prabhupada's, or according to Srila Prabhupada, they were simply ringing the bells and having picnics. So, what Prabhupada actually meant is the mission was lost. The preaching stopped. And Prabhupada also pointed out, rather emphatically, that don't make the same mistake that my godbrothers made after the disappearance of our Guru Maharaj. Now, in this way, we can see Bhakti Vinod Thakur gave the importance of an institution. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave the instruction, established the importance of an institution. And when it comes to an institution, the institution must be maintained collectively through a governing body. And then the other structure was also in place, but the main structure actually was the collective management. And because of not following the instructions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, their structure collapsed. And from the ruins of Gauriya Math, Srila Prabhupada actually revived the spirit of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhakti Vinod Thakur in the form of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON. Those who will have an in-depth perception, they will see that actually ISKCON is the continuity of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Gauriya Math and Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Naam Hat. And the institution was so important, according to Srila Prabhupada, that we can see that Prabhupada did not actually place himself in the forefront. He emphasized the institution more than his contribution or his position. The institution first, and then Prabhupada placed himself according to the institution. Like we see from the name itself, in mid-60s and early 70s, many spiritual leaders came from India and they established their organizations, especially in America. But we notice that all of those organizations were named after those individuals. Isn't it? But Prabhupada's institution was the only institution that was not named after himself. It was not the International Society for Bhakti Vedanta Consciousness. It was the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada gave so much emphasis on the structure of this institution and the managing structure of that institution that he actually very humbly placed himself as a member of the governing body. Prabhupada said that I am a member of the GBC. I am also a member of the GBC. Like, although undoubtedly he was the head of the institution, but still, in order to emphasize the importance of the governing body, Srila Prabhupada placed himself as a member of the governing body. So, now, why the institution is so important? One thing becomes rather clear here, that Bhakti Vinod Thakur wanted an institution. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted an institution, spiritual institution. And Srila Prabhupada, obviously, very, very clearly wanted the spiritual institution. Why? Because all of them knew that the propagation of Krishna consciousness all over the world in every town and village is not going to happen in one's own lifetime. It'll take a long, long time. It'll take generations. It may take hundreds of years. Therefore, the personality who is directing his followers in that direction must work collectively. And larger the group, stronger will be their effect of preaching. So, that is why they so emphatically pointed out that an institution must be in place. A spiritual institution must be in place. So that, like personalities like Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada will not come so often. These kind of spiritual personalities are very, very rare. But with their spiritual potency, the movement must continue. Like individually, if we stand there, as we saw in the Gauriya Math, like they are individually, they are very powerful preachers, they are very advanced devotees, they are very learned, but still, they were not, their preaching was not so effective. They preached to a small area, to a few, to a considerably small number of devotees. But this massive work of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, they could not. Even they could not actually continue to preach throughout India what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself did. He established 64 temples during his time in India. And he was preaching very effectively. But after his disappearance, his disciples could not actually carry on, even to maintain what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave. Why? Because that collective spirit was lost. And because that collective endeavor was not there, their individual endeavor, no matter how powerful they may have been, was not that effective. So Sankirtan means collective. And more united we become, more powerful will be our endeavor. Or more effective will be the result. And that is why we need an institution. A simple way I can say that if I try to spread Krishna consciousness on my own ability, how much will I be able to do? But when I come and act as a part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, immediately I get an incredibly large field to preach to. And all the arrangements are there. And today when we notice about the world of Krishna consciousness, then we can see that it is ISKCON which is actually really spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, making devotees, organizing festivals, building temples. It's all happening through ISKCON. Now what makes ISKCON so powerful and so effective? We have to understand it is because of the institution, the spirit of the institution. And it is through that institution that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is flowing. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes pleased when he sees that his devotees are working together. The same thing the Supreme Personality of Godhead told the Prachetas. Said, I am very pleased with you because you all are united with one mission. That is to glorify me. So when you become united to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forgetting about our personal interests and personal differences, then Mahaprabhu's mercy flows. So that is why an institution is so important. We need a spiritual institution. First, to protect our own spiritual life, to cultivate our spiritual life, and to propagate the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to train the devotees, those who come under the banner of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to give them the shelter and the protection. And the more united and more united this institution becomes, the more effective will be their preaching. So that is why we need an institution. Now, for the institution, to have an institution, what do we actually need? It has become very clear now that to keep the institution going, to keep the institution integrated, we need two things. One is the head of the institution and executive body that would manage the institution. Therefore, two things for this institution becomes absolutely essential. One is the position of Srila Prabhupada as the head of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and the governing body, the ultimate managing authority according to Srila Prabhupada's own instructions. Sometimes some individuals ask me, what do you mean by ISKCON? What is ISKCON? My answer to that is ISKCON is the institution where Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya and the GBC is the ultimate managing authority. That is what ISKCON is. And if somebody wants to start another ISKCON, okay, fine. Establish Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya and manage the society collectively through a governing body. And if you can function better than this ISKCON, then I'll go and join your ISKCON. But these two things must be there. Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya and the governing body as the collective body of management. And what is the purpose? What is the objective of the governing body? The governing body or GBC is the executor of Srila Prabhupada's will, Srila Prabhupada's plans, Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Srila Prabhupada gave us a very clear instruction how this society must be managed, and it is the responsibility of this governing body to see that ISKCON is being managed according to Srila Prabhupada's plans. And in that respect, the GBCs are considered to be the watchdog, or rather watchdogs of Srila Prabhupada. And whenever they see some threat, they will bark. And when a dog barks, sometimes a dog barks even when a friend comes to the house. And the friend of the master comes to the house, the dog barks. But then the master comes out and pats the dog on the head and says, okay, cool down, he's my friend, don't worry about him. So as GBCs, GBCs have to bark whenever they see any threat. And sometimes they may even bark when a friend comes. But they'll get a clear indication from the master that, don't worry, he's our friend. And then only he'll become quiet. So, now at this point I will just invite questions before I go any further. Yes, I thought as well there would be many. Yes, Kalakanta Prabhu raised his hand first. Okay, Vivashan Prabhu. Thank you, Vivashan Prabhu. Yes, Kalakanta Prabhu. Yeah, I will just cite a quotation in this respect. One devotee, one sannyasi actually, with a large following, he once expressed to Srila Prabhupada about his inability to work with the GBC. And he said, Prabhupada, I accept you, I accept. I accept you. There is no question about that. But I can't accept them. Then Srila Prabhupada asked him, if you accept me and then if I tell you that you follow them, then what will be your answer? So it is Prabhupada who is saying that. It is not that, out of the blue some individuals came and said, we are the GBCs and you have to accept. Rather, Prabhupada said that the GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. And it is not that it is a matter of our personal likes or dislike. It is a matter of necessity. What are the other option? The other option is that instead of a collective management, we establish one person as the head. Is there any other option, Kalakanta Prabhu, besides that? Now, if that head falls down, which is not really improbable, then what will happen to the structure? On the other hand, we have seen that although many leading individuals in our movement had spiritual difficulties, but because of the GBC, the collective concept of management was there, the ISKCON has been able to withstand that crisis, overcome that crisis. So first point is, Prabhupada gave us a structure of management, a line of authority, where he, although he did not really emphatically mention that, but it is becoming more and more clear to us the importance of Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya. And then Srila Prabhupada's executive body, or the executors of Srila Prabhupada's will, is the governing body who is going to be the ultimate managing authority of the society. And that means everyone in this institution will come under this governing body commission, no matter how powerful he is, no matter how influential he is. Everyone in ISKCON will have to function under the authority of the governing body. Yes. What do you mean by serving Srila Prabhupada?
Accepting Srila Prabhupada as your preeminent guru, reading his books.
Well, if I'm in the middle of nowhere, and if I just came across Srila Prabhupada's books, then yes, I can. But when there is an organized institution, and like ISKCON is established representing Srila Prabhupada, continuing with Srila Prabhupada's mission, and if I want to serve Srila Prabhupada, then what would be the most practical way to serve him? Through that institution. So if I want to serve Srila Prabhupada, I have to serve Srila Prabhupada through the institution, ISKCON. Ambarish Prabhu, I'll take it. To answer that question, I'll first repeat what I mentioned earlier. Is that unfortunately, after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance, Gaudiya Math, the structure of Gaudiya Math disintegrated. And then, from the ruins of Gaudiya Math, Srila Prabhupada revived the spirit of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his ISKCON. So that is our basic relationship. Like, we all are we all are actually integral parts of Gaudiya Math. But today, Gaudiya Math is standing in the name of ISKCON. And, okay, I'll just put it in a little more elaborately. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world. And the most important instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to spread Krishna consciousness. Now, if I follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, won't I naturally want to fulfill that instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, help the preaching of Krishna consciousness? Now, when I see that someone or some institution is very effectively spreading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission throughout the world, now, if I want to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, isn't it natural that I will join up with them? Right? And ISKCON, again, has a resolution with that spirit. The resolution says that anyone, irrespective of where he has been initiated, which sampradaya he belongs, can join ISKCON and be accepted as a member, as an effective member, of active member, provided he accepts Srila Prabhupada as the preeminent Shiksha Guru and the GBC body as the ultimate managing authority. So actually our door is wide open. Anybody can come and join us. Join us means join ISKCON and continue to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. But the thing is, like, in order to do that, he'll have to accept the norm of this institution, that Prabhupada is the founder acharya and the preeminent Shiksha Guru, and the GBC is the ultimate managing authority. Well, I'll take... Oh, okay. Should I do it? Okay, from now on I'll do it. Okay. Yeah, okay, fine. Thank you, Pushkar Prabhu. Oh, I see. Yes. Okay, I'll try to convey the question. It would be better if there was a microphone, another microphone. Anyway, that it has been perceived that different religious groups do branch out. The members do branch out, and some branch become prominent. And like we see in ISKCON, that it has become the main branch, or as you expressed, the trunk. To successfully continue the activities of that institution, there's a need for a management structure. But that management structure, because they are the ultimate head, should not be just always imposing their authority over the members, but there should actually be a reciprocation between the members and the structure, management structure. Did I get the spirit of your question?
That's part of it, sure.
Yeah.
All right, we'll say that's the main part of
it. Yeah, I was trying to summarize it. Yeah. I didn't answer his question. You had your hands up, but I didn't answer his. Do you have any?
Accepting the GBC or under the authority, which you just said, they should not impose
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you see, there's always two sides to everything. Material side and the spiritual side. The material structure is always, you know, the hierarchy tries to impose their authority over their subordinates. Whereas the spiritual structure is based on love and trust. Now we have to remember that our ISKCON is not a material institution, it's a spiritual society of devotees. And the devotees' relationship are solely based on love. And to be more precise, love for Krishna. Rupa Goswami is describing the Madhyamadhikari devotee. He has love for Krishna, friendship for the devotees, towards the devotees, compassion for the innocents, and disregard for the offenders. And then it is explained that actually it is the love for Krishna that is reflected on different individuals in different way. It's the love for Krishna that is reflected on the devotees in the form of friendship. It is the love for Krishna that is reflected towards the individual, I mean to the innocent, in the form of compassion and disregard for the offenders. So yes, like love is the essential binding and driving factor. Now, I will honestly admit that due to our immaturity, you see, most of the devotees in ISKCON are very young in their spiritual life. And they are also coming from various different cultures. But I feel very confident that as the devotees keep advancing, they will be able to exude that love towards others. And the relationship, especially between the senior and junior, must be established on that love. And that love will be manifest in the form of affection flowing from the senior to the juniors, and respect rising from the junior. Then only the respect will naturally rise from the junior to the senior. Yes? Okay, so again, my response will be, due to immaturity, you know, the individuals are not able to function on a larger sphere. Rather, they're functioning on a smaller sphere, as you said, the guru and disciples. But we should try to become more advanced and come out of that small boundary, right? And create a larger sphere of our loving reciprocation. And then only our movement will grow. Yes, I'll take your question. Yes, please. Please, because the devotees won't be able to listen.
Simplistic. It's very nice and very sweet. But those who have been around 30, 32 years or longer, you know, and have really observed and participated in all the things that have transpired. For example, we joke, you joke, you say, well, if under these simplistic guidelines, some of us wanted to start at ISKCON, putting Srila Prabhupada as the prominent, the preeminent Shiksha Guru, and form a GBC, and they can do a better job, you join it. Well, the fact is that any attempt to do so has been thwarted by the present GBC, and therefore we have seen the breakaways, such as Shukrara, Prabhupada Swami, Narasimha Maharaj, and a lot of successful. We also have seen Srila Prabhupada's God brothers have put forth a tremendous amount of energy, such as, and maybe I'm making a chance by mentioning names, but the Srinivasa Maharaj and Narayan Maharaj. And then you use something else that was kind of simplistic. You said, well, after Bhaktisiddhanta left, there was a,
okay, disintegrated.
Disintegrated. Well, one could say from 1978 to at least 1986, this kind of disintegrated when a very offensive mentality took place called the Acharya program. And we go to, I'm going to go try to draw a line to something last night. We saw a playlist, and we saw resentment, we saw anger, we saw emotions, we saw feelings, we saw pain, we saw suffering, we saw so many things being revealed. Through this display by the recruits. Well done, the best things I've seen amateurly done in this one. And now you bring that wonderful word at the end, love, which we're all looking for, developing our love of God, Srila Prabhupada. What am I drawing? My question is that where do you see, because one of the things that I see that the GBC has never done. They have never formally asked for forgiveness or apologized, and though there's so many books and so many things I've read and hate here, since the things that have taken place, since transgressions have taken place, since I've seen so many of my God brothers and God sisters really driven from this movement. And this is reality, what we're really dealing with, and this is the pain and suffering and the things we're feeling in our heart.
Okay,
and
yeah.
We need to apply and be more
right.
In our response to the situation.
Yeah, thank you for your observation and comments. You know, my response to that will be, okay, mistakes have been made. Then what do we do? Do we give up or do we try to rectify? And as an inside member of ISKCON, I can say that the mood has changed considerably in the leadership of ISKCON. Things are not the same the way it used to be some years ago. Devotees are trying. And that's why it is time that we all have to get together and try to push on Srila Prabhupada's mission for the sake of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You see, what I'm trying to do is, I'm just trying to present certain observations of mine. It is not that I'm trying to undermine anybody or disgrace anybody. But I feel that it is important that we recognize where we went wrong and what needs to be done to rectify those mistakes. Yes. Okay, well, I mean, I will not address that issue. I'm not here to discuss about that at this point in time. Yes. Jai Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai. You will take the hype. Right.
And keeping that in mind, we should hold on to our love and trust for each other.
Right.
In spite of the difficulties. We do this in our families when we have problems with our husbands or wives or children. We don't throw away our love and trust unless we're making a big mistake or unless they've entirely thrown away theirs. We try to hold on to these things, especially out of I'd love for Srila Prabhupada. So, mistakes have been made, and there will be mistakes in the future, no doubt. However, the overall purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to spread the chanting of the holy names all over the world. And as long as that mission is being served, I'm staying right here.
Thank you.
Would like to say that I think that forming alternative institutions would result in the same thing, because the people who have founded, who have brought this movement of prophets of Kali Yuga, and come with all of our faults, and if you start an institution separate, there has to be management, and they're going to be coming with Kali Yuga's products. So are their dependents. So better to solve the problem here in the house than to make a new house and try to start all over again.
Yeah, thank you.
To expand on the same comment, a good healing strategy might be to take a look at the alternative societies that have grown up during the period of mistakes and appreciate what they've done. So many devotees have maintained shelter and continued in service to Krishna consciousness in a time when they were shocked at what they were seeing and someone that was supposed to be called their guru. So there's so many good things that were accomplished for that, because everybody had that basic love towards the Supreme Lord and towards Archetend. With that appreciation, that breaks down some of the resistance that may be there towards the fact that there is an alternative and an opportunity for integration, and we have to resolve
it. It was also characterized earlier that there have been no statements of contrition by the GBC for past mistakes, but you'll find those in any number of years of GBC resolutions where these acts of contrition, where these statements of contrition have been made, most particularly recently towards the disciples and also His Holiness Srila Bhakti Rakshara Sridhar Maharaj. Mm. So these, you know, this kind of work in progress. We have to be patient and we have to be helpful.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll go this way, this next. Yeah, please. The balance is that the GBC is the Shiksha Gurus. Like, because it's a spiritual institution and the GBC is guiding us, you know, how we should conduct ourselves, how we should be engaged in our service. And so in that way, the GBCs are the Shiksha Gurus. And not only the GBCs, actually according to Gaudiya Vaishnava consideration, anyone who is guiding us in our spiritual life or helping us to make advancement is a Shiksha Guru. So with that understanding, I will say the temple presidents are Shiksha Gurus, the departmental heads under whom we are serving in the temples, they are Shiksha Gurus. The Bhakta program leader is a Shiksha Guru. You see, like, as our concept or as we make advancement in spiritual life, our concept of our spiritual master increases. You see, a neophyte devotee is he who considers that only Krishna is God and he is the only devotee. He doesn't recognize the devotees. That's a neophyte devotee. So at a neophyte stage also devotees will think that my Diksha Guru is the only Guru and I don't see anybody else. But as one makes spiritual advancement, he will see how others who are helping him in his spiritual life, guiding him in his spiritual life, are also his Gurus. And then, ultimately, what is Uttamadhikari? A Uttamadhikari or a pure devotee is one who sees that everyone else has become pure devotees, only he couldn't become a devotee. So in that sense, in that platform, doesn't he see that everybody else is his guru and he is just a disciple? So that is how our spiritual advancement is manifest. Can you repeat, please?
There was one time, there was a question put by one prominent sannyasi.
Yeah.
I even heard it argued one time in one Sunday feast that how can an institution come, how can an institution block your relationship with your Diksha Guru?
Okay, my response to that will be that it should not happen. The Diksha Guru and the authorities should not get into an open disagreement where the disciples will get affected. If the Diksha Guru has any differences with his temple president, he should just try to sort it out behind closed doors under the proper authority structure. Because otherwise there will be schisms. Right? Otherwise there will be revolution. And on principle, in ISKCON, everyone is under the authority of the GBC. Even the gurus are under the authority of the GBC. Right? Like, for example, say I am initiating today. Why? Because ISKCON has authorized me to give initiation. And tomorrow, if ISKCON says, well, you can't give initiation, I have to stop. Yes, Sastric Committee, Sastric Advisory Committee.
Yeah, to make sure that the resolution is not some kind of,
not that every resolution is taken to the Sastric Advisory Committee. But when the GBCs feel that certain resolution or certain proposal needs some in-depth research, then they pass it on to that committee. Mother Mahamaya had been raising her hands.
GBC, especially that the Chandra 16 rounds, following four regular principles, And, you know, considering the history of GBCM, I'm always following that standard. And I know there isn't accountability in place today, so my question is, what would it take to start such a program of accountability?
Well, again, we have to go back to Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada gave a very clear indication that if a GBC does not follow the four regulative principles or breaks the regulative principles, you know, he should be removed. And in the past, that happened not with only with the GBCs. It happened with the gurus. When the gurus failed to follow the four regulative principles, they had to step down. So we have this consideration of accountability very much in place.
Well, Maharaj, it's only when it becomes extremely evident that it's noticed. What I'm talking about is monitoring.
Yeah. You see, the ultimate consideration is that the GBC, you know, when the GBC becomes very strong, then only we'll have a strong ISKCON. Like, the problem is when some individual becomes so strong that the GBC feel hesitant to deal with him without having proper evidences. Like, for example, you know, when a new bhakta breaks the regulative principles, you know, we don't have any difficulty dealing with him. But say, for example, when a guru with so many disciples, you know, we get to hear that he is breaking the regulative principles, you know, then it becomes very difficult. In one hand, you know, the individual is very powerful, and we know that if some strict measure is taken against him, there'll be a lot of damage, right? That's why, you know, they have to be 100% confident, 100% sure before they take the action, right? But actually the ideal situation would be that everybody in ISKCON should be so, especially the leaders should be so honest and open that when they have any spiritual difficulties, that themselves will step down. And that is the ideal version of community.
Maharaj, two things basically I'd like to just comment on. First, that love is based on knowledge, otherwise it's sentiment. And we have a lot of good sentiment, but unless it's based on knowledge, it's temporary.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that any leader of a spiritual movement is not dealing with ordinary people. Because you keep on speaking about the head being, of course, which is not contested at all. So Prabhupada and the GBC being the most important thing. But actually, the devotees who the GBC is supposed to be facilitating are very important. Otherwise, you're just going to have a society of GBC. No, this is just a thing. So, since we're dealing with people who are naturally advancing more and more as they dive into Krishna consciousness, the devotees are becoming broad-minded, more individual, because the nature of the soul is that he's an individual, and it's very difficult to manage individuals. So the nature of a manager will want to be to make categories that everyone can fit in. So this is a very big challenge for the GBC, because we're dealing basically with people who are extremely individual. Granted, there must be basic axioms that are not refutable, which is the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Everybody in ISKCON must obviously follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. He called himself an ISKCON member. But even within those teachings, there's so much, seems to be so much individuality, but there are basic axioms. So what I'm actually saying is that the duty of any manager, especially of such a variegated spiritual society, has to be extremely broad and liberal, knowing that the basic thing is the axioms, which are the four principles, and accepting Joe Paul's teachings. There might be some others, but I don't see anything that is as important as that. And then leave room for the growth that naturally occurs as you advance spiritually. Because I think a lot of people have felt very restricted, and for a Vaishnava, who's basically an individual, someone who chants Hare Krishna becomes extremely individualistic in a relationship with Krishna and with the world. So that cannot be hampered. So that's a very big challenge, I think, for any leader.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. But I'll just make one point here that, again, you know, as I said, like, there are two sides, the material side and the spiritual side. You see, the management structure or management or the authority structure in the materialistic platform is based on exploitation. Whereas in the spiritual side, it is based on facilitation and service. So the higher, you see, in the material platform, the higher one goes, the larger of a sphere he has to exploit, isn't it? Whereas in spiritual side, the higher one goes, he gets a greater sphere to serve and take care of. So higher we go, we have to develop a greater service attitude and caring attitude. And that will be synonymous to love that we are talking about. Thank you very much. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. You were mentioning that, as you were saying, the temple president, the temple commander, and there are so many people that are shiksha gurus. But I think that it depends on what we understand is what is shiksha guru, because many of us feel shiksha guru is someone we give our heart to in spiritual advancement, and we actually surrender our hearts to advance spiritually. And I think that we've gone wrong in the past by imposing that all of the authorities or all anyone who has any position in ISKCON, especially like Sankirtan leader or anything, they may be good at managing a certain aspect, but they are not necessarily the spiritual guides that can actually touch our hearts and help us. And because of this problem, I think we have to understand that the position is to be respected. Temple president, temple commander, sankirtan leader, whatever, GBC, the position of their management is to be respected and cooperated with. But the actual shiksha guru or diksha guru is someone I take some spiritual inspiration. And in other words, we should respect the position and not necessarily the person. Because even amongst the GBC, they don't always respect each other's opinions over certain particular things. They may disagree. But as a body, they are working together as a management body. So I think that's the difference between, as you said, the spiritual and material side. And one more little comment was that, and please explain.
Yeah, please feel free. Yeah.
But one more little comment was that if we are so caught up now in the senior and junior, when Prabhupada is only not even a whole generation away from us, has left, and we're so caught up in who is senior and who is junior, what to speak of 50 years, 100 years from now? There will be chaos in our society because so everyone here is so close to Srila Prabhupada. And I think that is what you were explaining in the beginning of your lecture. So
thank you for that. If you can comment on the Shiksha Guru and the position of a manager. Yeah. First of all, we have to consider that ISKCON is a spiritual institution in the middle of the material nature. Therefore, we have to consider one perfect situation, that is ISKCON as a perfect spiritual institution, and the individuals, how they should behave or how they should react with each other. And the other consideration at the same time is that yes, because we are in the material nature, we will be affected by the material, the influences of the material nature. Now, because the influences of the material nature will be there, yes, we have to deal with that. But at the same time, we have to have the understanding of the perfect situation very clear in our minds. And not to speak of just a spiritual organization, you know, since I'm coming from, you know, somewhat Vedic background, I can say in the Vedic society, the understanding of a guru means who is senior to you. Not only who is giving you, you know, Krishna and inspiring you in your spiritual life, but, you know, I come from a culture where if someone, if my cousin is 3 days older than I am, I had to treat him as my senior. And I tell you, by developing this forced, somewhat forced, form of respect, you know, did not make me lose anything. On the other hand, actually, it helped me to gain a lot. And what I was also trying to point out is that, is the temple president, he's a manager, but what he or she is managing? He's managing the spiritual life of the individuals, those who are in the temple under his guidance. And yes, because we are in a material platform, there will be mistakes made. Some temple presidents or some Sankirtan leader or some Bhakta program leader or will exploit some individuals. But the thing is that we have to have the clear understanding in our mind what we are here for. And we must try to create that atmosphere. Not just get caught, not just dwell in our, you know, in the possible mistakes and forget our spiritual objective. So that is my comment. I think Mataji wants to say something to that again. Please.
When you say
no, get the microphone.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
I'm only asking and trying to help myself and everyone to understand this in depth. Because personally, my own experience for the last 30-something years in this time, if I followed, somehow or other, I almost take pride that I was somewhat independent-minded because my spiritual life is a very internal thing. And if I followed my temple commanders or my temple president as my spiritual guides or my Sankirtan leaders, I would have been breaking the regulative principles. I would have been very confused, and I think some devotees have had this experience. So we're trying to get everything out here to understand how devotees have felt in the past. And I almost take pride that I maintained my independence. My spiritual independence, although I always cooperated. Whenever anything was logical or in line with Prabhupada, I cooperated. If it wasn't, I would leave and go somewhere else where I could serve Prabhupada peacefully. And so I think that this is a very serious matter that when we say that every... you know, even anyone like your cousin, 3 days older than you, yes, respect must be there. I'm not denying that. Respect, showing, you know, politeness, etiquette, everything should be there. But you don't always surrender to a cousin who's 3 days older than you if he tells you go jump in the lake.
But if he was my temple president, I would have.
then I'm sorry.
No, anyway, the point, again, you know, I mean, do you want me to respond? Okay. You see, my
I'm going to blurt out something here. If it was your temple president telling you to do something that you knew was not the correct thing, you would do it anyway?
Well, I'm not... I'm not actually considering the imperfection of the person. I'm talking about the position of an individual in certain situation. Right? Okay, the thing is, temple president says, one temple president makes a mistake, That doesn't mean that all the temple presidents are going to make mistakes, therefore I don't accept the authority of the temple president.
We accept authority, we cooperate, but we don't surrender our whole heart.
Okay, so my response to that will be, as I was about to give it, is that, yes, we joined ISKCON, which was very young. Individuals in different positions were young in their spiritual life. And they made mistakes. And we, many of us, had been victims of those mistakes. Now let us learn our lesson from those mistakes and create a better ISKCON for the future. Yes, Suha? Well, you know, spiritual management, I would say, is managing through inspiration. Personally, I feel, I don't like to get into the nitty-gritties of management. But what I like to do is inspire individuals and make them do things. And that's how, you know, I feel that the spiritual management should function. Like, if I try to control different individuals, I know that I'm not able to do that. And that's why I don't get into that, actually. But when it comes to inspiring, facilitating, and, you know, being in a certain position, probably I have certain facilities to provide those elements to different individuals. And I do see that they do accomplish. And like Prabhupada was a perfect manager, but how Prabhupada was managing? Wasn't Prabhupada managing by inspiring devotees? And devotees being inspired went to, you know, young boys and girls went to different corners of the world and spread Krishna consciousness most effectively. And at the same time, Prabhupada had a vision, and Prabhupada knew how to execute that vision. So in that way, again, Prabhupada was a very, very competent manager. Yes, I think this... okay. So it's almost time for... Okay, yeah, okay. So, give it to him.
Maharaj, sometimes when I was in Mayapur, I used to hear that when you said about Gaudiya Math, how they fell, sometimes I used to hear people saying that they used to talk wrong things about it, and I was just wondering, is there a difference between ISKCON and Gaudiya Math?
Spiritually, no. We belong to the same family. Gaudiya Math was created by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and we all are followers of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai, Samaveto Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gaurango. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Dishatadi. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Today I have been asked to speak about Srila Prabhupada. And I was fortunate to have some association of His Divine Grace. Although I joined ISKCON very late, Srila Prabhupada left this planet in 77 and I joined ISKCON in 76. But due to my inconceivable good fortune, due to Srila Prabhupada's causeless mercy, and due to the kind compassion from some of my senior godbrothers, I received this good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada for serving His Divine Grace for last 10 months of His presence on this planet. I came in contact with ISKCON in 1970. I met the devotees in Hamburg, and it was very interesting sight to see these Western boys and girls dressed in Indian clothes. They were chanting and dancing, singing the holy name of the Lord. And so I naturally became attracted and went and spoke to them. And they invited me to the temple. I visited the temple in Hamburg in a place called Altona a few times. But then due to my misfortune, I would say, that I stopped visiting the temple. Actually, one devotee was not very nice to me and he started to blast me. And that was the end of my contact with ISKCON at that time. So much so that when I saw the devotees in one side of the road, I took the other side to avoid them. And then I went back to India in 1975 in search of a spiritual master. I thought at that time that as soon as I arrive in India, I'll find a guru and he will guide me in my spiritual life. But unfortunately, after 1 year's search for a spiritual master, I couldn't find any. I felt that my hippie friends in the West were more advanced than those people. And then, fortunately, when practically I gave up my search for a spiritual master, I came across the Nectar of Devotion. And when I started to read, from the very first page, I felt that this was what I was looking for. And I became so absorbed in reading Nectar of Devotion that I read until I fell asleep. And when I woke up the next morning, the first thing I did was to pick up the book and start reading. And the next night I had the darshan of Srila Prabhupada. I won't call it a dream, because it was so vivid that in my mind it was very, very clear that it was not a dream but a perception of another reality. And I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on something that looked like a throne. Those days I didn't know what a vasasan was, because in India the sadhus generally don't sit on an elaborate asana. Rather, they just sit in a simple seat. But when I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on a very elaborate and decorated seat, it looked more like a throne to me. And I saw His Divine Grace effulgent, a brilliant light was coming out of Him. And just that sight was enough for me to realize that finally I found my spiritual master. And I offered my obeisances to Him, didn't ask any question or didn't say anything, but my heart was filled with joy that I found my spiritual master. Then I went to the temple in Calcutta to inquire about Srila Prabhupada, and I was told that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. And so I decided to wait till Srila Prabhupada came back to India, and then when he came back, then I would surrender myself unto him. And until then, I decided to travel to different places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes and Sri Krishna performed his pastimes. Thinking that practically the first place I went to visit was Mayapur. And the devotees in Mayapur were so nice, so inviting. Like whoever I spoke to, he practically asked me, why don't you stay here with us? And those days Mayapur was very different from the way it is today. There were not so many devotees, very few devotees were there. And practically most of the devotees were from the West. And the atmosphere was extremely serene. And so the devotees kept on asking me, why don't you stay here with us? And I also started to think that I already made up my mind to join, and here these devotees are so affectionately, with so much kindness and warmth, asking me to join, to stay. So why don't I stay? And thinking that, the next morning the final thing happened. There was a Bhagavatam class. And after the class, the speaker, he was a sannyasi, he just asked me, why don't you stay here? And I also felt, yes, why don't I stay here? And so I went to the shop, bought a dhoti and kurta, and went to a barber, shaved my head, and went to Ganga, took my bath, and threw away my old clothes, and put on the devotee dress. And at the back of my mind I was thinking, no, actually that sannyasi who was giving the class, he actually told me that you can try it out for 2 months, and if you don't like it, then you can go back home. And I thought, yes, that's not a bad proposal. I can try it out for 2 months, and if I don't like it, then I can go back home, and my hair will grow within these 2 months. So I decided to shave up and join the movement. And at that time, as I mentioned, Srila Prabhupada was in America. Then I got to know that Srila Prabhupada came back to India, and Prabhupada was in Bombay. So I expressed my desire to go to Bombay to Bhavananda Prabhu, who was the co-director of Mayapur. And he told me that Prabhupada's health is not good. Prabhupada is not giving darshan to anybody as such. And besides that, in Bombay, no one knows you. So you will never get to see Srila Prabhupada. So rather, you stay here. And when Prabhupada comes, then you will meet him. So I also thought that's not really a bad idea, because Prabhupada was going to come to Mayapur. And it was only a matter of a couple of months. And besides that, I was already involved in many different activities in Mayapur. But then we got the news that Srila Prabhupada was going to Kumbh Mela. And a group of devotees from Mayapur, and plus some devotees who came from Japan. Those days, Guru Kripa Prabhu was the GBC of Japan, and he had a group of devotees, he had a team called Namhat, and they were very fired up devotees. And so he was also there with his boys in Mayapur, and a few devotees from Mayapur and Guru Kripa's party, Namhat, we all drove in a bus to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. When we arrived in Kumbh Mela, as soon as I got out of the bus, the first thing I did, I asked the devotees, where was Prabhupada staying? And I rushed to Srila Prabhupada's tent. And the tent was walled by a corrugated tin sheet, and there was a big-bodied Western devotee guarding the gate. And he told me that I should come in the evening when Prabhupada would give darshan, because can't just walk into Srila Prabhupada's tent like that. So I just accepted, and I was just walking around, loitering around there. And then all of a sudden I saw Bhavananda Prabhu was coming with a basket of vegetables that he brought for Srila Prabhupada from Mayapur, and he was taking that basket to Srila Prabhupada. And he saw me. He said, come, I'm going to Srila Prabhupada. And so I ran behind him. He was actually running towards Prabhupada's tent, and so I also ran behind him. So we both of us just ran past the guard. And the mistake I made there also was, while Bhavananda Prabhu walked straight into the tent, I offered obeisances from outside. And when I got up, and then I saw that Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk in the tent, and I wanted to go in, but Prabhupada's secretary at that time, he stopped me and told me that Prabhupada was taking prasad and I shouldn't go in. So another disappointment, so I walked out. That evening, for some reason, I came a little late when Prabhupada already started to give his darshan. The tent was packed. It was so packed that I had to practically squeeze in between the last row of the people and the wall of the tent. And at that time, the only thing that I could register was my heartbeat. My heart was beating really loudly. And I didn't know what was happening, but later on, I recalled that this must be what ecstasy actually is. And then when I came back to my external senses, then I could see that many devotees, many people there were asking Srila Prabhupada questions, and Prabhupada was answering those questions in the most brilliant way. I don't remember many of the questions and answers, but excepting two, and three rather. Anyway, I will just mention one. one middle-aged, prosperous-looking Indian gentleman asked Srila Prabhupada in a rather challenging way, why are you building new temples when the old temples need repair? At that time, the Vrindavan temple, Krishna Balaram temple, just opened, and not just opened, it opened in 1974, I think, 75, yeah. And Bombay temple construction was going on, and so this person's point was that when so many old temples are there needing repair, why are you building new temples? Why don't you repair these new temples? Prabhupada did not answer his question directly, but Prabhupada asked him, who is that lady sitting next to you? The man replied, well, she is my wife. Then Prabhupada asked him, why did you get married? Now this man was really flustered. He didn't know what to say. So then Prabhupada told him that one gets married in order to produce children. Putrarthe kriyate bharja. But why did you get... He said, but why do you need to produce your own children when there are so many children loitering in the streets? The man, I think, got the message. But still Prabhupada explained to him that just as you want to have your own children, similarly devotees want to build the temples to offer to Krishna and invite him to come there so that he can worship him. So Kumbh Mela was extremely wonderful. There were about 250 to 300 devotees from all over the world, and it is one of the biggest spiritual gatherings in India. That Kumbh Mela in 1977 January was actually the Purna Kumbha that comes once in 144 years. So in Allahabad, that was the Purna Kumbha, and naturally the place was completely filled with pilgrims, and as a result of that, the place became quite noisy, and Srila Prabhupada was feeling a little disturbed, because there was not only there was blaring loudspeakers during the day, even at night there was this blaring loudspeakers going on, and Srila Prabhupada couldn't translate, so he was feeling disturbed. So one morning we got to know that Prabhupada was leaving, and so I just heard that Prabhupada was leaving that night, and then after a little while Bhavananda Prabhu came and told me that Prabhupada was leaving, Prabhupada was going to Calcutta and he is traveling by train, and I have been included in that team. A group of devotees who would travel with Srila Prabhupada. There were 14 devotees who were traveling with Srila Prabhupada at the time in the train. And he must have arranged this for me, or rather included me in the team. So I was naturally very, very happy. And that night, Srila Prabhupada left Allahabad, and actually a first class carriage was hooked into one train that was going from Delhi to Calcutta. So this entire carriage was for Srila Prabhupada and his entourage. So the train started at night, and soon after the train left, we all took rest. The next morning, I was chanting, and Bhavananda Prabhu, he was a sannyasi at the time, he came and told me, "Come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada." Now all this while I was dying to meet Srila Prabhupada, but now that the time came when I was going to really meet Srila Prabhupada, I felt completely unqualified. And for some reason I just felt some reluctance or some inability to go and meet Srila Prabhupada. Probably Bhavananda Maharaj could understand what was going on in my mind. So he grabbed me by my hand, dragged me through the corridor, opened the Srila Prabhupada's compartment door and pushed me in. And I fell flat on the ground like a stick offering obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. And when I got up, I saw that Srila Prabhupada was looking at me. And so Prabhupada motioned and told me that, "Sit here." Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him. In the Indian first class compartments, there are two rows of seats, one facing the other. In the other seat facing Srila Prabhupada's, Bhavananda Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj and Rameshwar Maharaj were there. And Abhiram Prabhu, who was the Calcutta Temple President at that time, he was sitting on the floor. And when Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him, I said, "No, Prabhupada, I'll sit on the floor." Then Prabhupada said, "No, you can sit here." There was a blanket spread over Srila Prabhupada's seat. So I rolled the corner of the edge of the blanket and sat at the corner of the seat. And after some initial exchanges, Srila Prabhupada gave me his first instruction. He told me to translate his books into Bengali. And I did not really translate in Bengali before. So I asked Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, I haven't really translated before and I don't know whether I'll be able to do that." Then Prabhupada said, "No. Practice makes a man perfect. Just keep trying." And I was very fortunate in that way to receive a service directly given by Srila Prabhupada. Then Srila Prabhupada came to Calcutta Calcutta was the place where the temple was actually my home temple, we can say, because Mayapur and Calcutta always had been together, and I used to spend a lot of time. So now that Prabhupada is here, it's something like Prabhupada is at our home. And so all the time I was with Srila Prabhupada. That evening, Prabhupada was giving darshan to a group of very important people. And when the aratik started, Prabhupada told everyone to go and join the aratik, go and attend the aratik. So I also left the room, went to aratik. But then it occurred to me that aratik I can attend every day, but the possibility of being with Prabhupada is very rare. So I left the aratik and went to Srila Prabhupada's room. When I opened the door, I saw that Srila Prabhupada was counting money. The Guru Dakshina that Prabhupada received, the donations that Prabhupada received, he was counting that. And it was a little shocking to me, because in India generally you think that the sadhus don't have anything to do with money. But then I just brushed that thought aside, thinking whatever Srila Prabhupada does is perfect, and I'm not in a position to judge Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, still counting the money, looked up and asked me, "So what do you want?" So I said, "Prabhupada, I thought that I would just be with you." And Prabhupada said, "Come on, sit down." And as Prabhupada finished counting, opened the drawers of his table, and very meticulously kept the money inside, closed the drawer, and then he asked me, "So, do you want to say something?" And I just blurted out, "Srila Prabhupada, will you please give me initiation?" Because I heard that many devotees, in spite of being in the movement for a few years, hadn't received initiation. So I felt if Prabhupada rejected me, then what would happen? So that's why I just asked with a doubtful heart. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, I'll give you initiation." He said, "During the Gaur Purnima festival, I'll give you initiation." And I felt so happy. Then Prabhupada went to Bhubaneswar from Calcutta, and I stayed back. Actually, I also could have gone with Srila Prabhupada, but I decided to stay back because I was printing a book that the articles, I collected some articles from Prabhupada's early writings in some Bengali Gauriya magazines called Gauriya Patrika. Prabhupada's writings from 48 to 51. I collected those articles and I was printing that into a book. So I thought that I would rather stay back and print the book and offer it to Srila Prabhupada when he came back. And that's why I didn't go. Anyway, then Prabhupada, after about 2 weeks, he came back to Mayapur. And it was an amazing sight, Srila Prabhupada's return to Mayapur. That was soon before Mayapur festival. So there were hundreds of devotees. And Srila Prabhupada got out of the car and he started to walk, with devotees standing on both sides of the road. And I noticed that devotees were singing just normal But then, as soon as Srila Prabhupada came, as soon as they saw Srila Prabhupada, just tears started to flow from their eyes, as if just like that. I mean, in the moment before, they were just normal chanting, and then all of a sudden, there was a total transformation, and tears started to flow from their eyes. And Srila Prabhupada went to the temple, had the darshan of Radha Madhav. Those days we had a very small Radha Madhav in Mayapur. Mayapur temple also was very small. It was the ground floor of the lotus building. This big temple was not built at that time. And the size of Radha Madhav, probably you remember, was exactly the size of Radha Damodar that we have in Gita Nagari. And actually these three sets of deities, Radha Madhav, Radha Damodar, and the deities that we have in Boston, these three sets of deities came at the same time. They are the same size. Anyway, it was so wonderful that Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and every evening Srila Prabhupada was giving darshan, and I had access to Srila Prabhupada's room anytime, because Srila Prabhupada asked me to translate, and Prabhupada wanted me to show him what I was translating. Then one day, Srila Prabhupada gave me a stack of letters that he received, a stack of Bengali letters, and he asked me to reply them. So the way he wanted me to reply them was, he asked me to read the letters, and then he gave me the points that I should mention in reply, and then I had to formulate the letter, write a rough copy, take it to him, read it out, he would make further corrections, and then I used to write it on his, the final letter was written on his letterhead, and then Prabhupada used to sign them. So Prabhupada gave me a stack of Bengali letters. I when I finished answering all those letters, Srila Prabhupada then gave me a stack of Hindi letters. And he asked me to reply them. Prabhupada actually asked me, you write Hindi, can you reply in Hindi also? I said, Prabhupada, I can write in Hindi, but my handwriting is not so nice. And Prabhupada said, nobody's Hindi handwriting is actually nice. And then he told me a joke. He said, once somebody received a letter from his friend. So he wrote back to his friend that next time you write a letter, please send me the train fare to go to your place. So his friend wrote back, you know, why do you want me to send you the train fare? He said, because in order to figure out what you wrote, I have to go back to you. Because only you can decipher what you wrote. So anyway, Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters, and I replied them, and Prabhupada was pleased. Then one day he called Tamal Krishna. One day he told me that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And at that time, still Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. So Prabhupada called Tamal Krishna Maharaj and told him that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs, and he wanted me to move in and share the room with him. And this way another good fortune was created for me. Like, I had the good fortune of being in the same room with Tamal Krishna Maharaj for practically 10 months. Wherever we went, Tamakrishna Maharaj and I stayed in the same room, and it was a wonderful experience. Sometimes I may have resented it at times, that because Tamakrishna Maharaj was a very strict person. But today I can see that how much he has contributed in training me up. And we used to have a lot of fun also together. One day I was a little tired, I fell asleep during the day. Tamakrishna Maharaj woke me up and said, a brahmachari shouldn't sleep during the day. So one day I saw Tamakrishna Maharaj sleeping. So anyway, I guess I won't have to say. So I woke him up and told him that a sannyasi doesn't sleep during the day. At first he was a little upset, but then he had a good laugh, recalling what he had done to me. Oftentimes, Tamakrishna Maharaj is perceived as a very strict and hard person, individual. But those who had the opportunity to come to a close proximity could immediately see what a kind and soft-hearted person he actually was. And my experience with Maharaj was he was extremely protective. Like I was, in a way, I was his man at that time. And he would protect me from any possible onslaught from anyone. After Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada went to Bombay. Oh, that's also another interesting episode. One day Bhavananda Maharaj told me that I should actually stay back in Mayapur. When Prabhupada was preparing to go to Bombay, he said, you should stay in Mayapur because you have so many things to do. And actually it's true, I had a lot of service to render there. Like, at that time the long building was being constructed and I was taking care of all the purchasing of the materials. And plus I was printing a Bengali magazine, Bengali Back to Godhead. And a lot of other printings were also going on. So he asked me to stay on. And he convinced me that service in separation was better than service in union. And anyway, he had already done so much for me, and I was extremely indebted to him. So when he told me, and I treated him as my mentor, as my leader, so I accepted whatever he told me. But still, at the heart of my heart, I had that feeling of disappointment. So when all the arrangements was going on for devotees preparing to leave with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada asked me, aren't you coming? And I just told Prabhupada, Bhavananda Maharaj said that service in separation is better than service in union. Then Prabhupada said, yes, that's true. But I think when your spiritual master asks you to serve him in personally, then I think you should do that. I was just waiting to hear something like that. So I immediately ran to Bhavananda Maharaj and I told him what Prabhupada told. And then I added that Prabhupada wanted you to pay for my fare as well. So Prabhupada came to Bombay, and Prabhupada wanted to stay in his house, his quarters that was being built in one of the towers on the fifth floor of the new building. When Prabhupada expected that the tower, that his quarters would be ready, but unfortunately it was not ready, and when Prabhupada was told that he'll have to stay for a few days in his old apartment, then Prabhupada was very upset. Prabhupada insisted that no, he wanted to stay in his new apartment. And the leading devotees there considered what to do, and then they came up with an idea that Prabhupada was going to give a program in Bombay, in Cross Maidan, for 3 days. And from our Juhu temple to Bombay city center is a long distance, and Bombay is a very crowded city with a lot of traffic jams. So it was decided that it would be better if Prabhupada stayed in Bombay. So they tried to make some arrangements. The first consideration was the house of one Bhogilal Patel. He had a big palatial building, and he was very fond of Srila Prabhupada. But unfortunately, he was not in town at that time. So the next arrangement that they could make was in the house of Kartikeya Mahadeviya. So Kartikeya Mahadeviya also was another industrialist, quite a wealthy person from Bombay. And he had a beautiful apartment right on the beach, and in one of the most exclusive apartment buildings in Bombay. And so the arrangement was made that Prabhupada would stay there in that house, in his apartment. And Kartikeya Mahadeviya moved out of his apartment with his whole family. They stayed in the same building. I think they had some relatives. Some relatives had another apartment in the same building. So they moved out into that apartment, and they arranged for Srila Prabhupada to stay in their apartment. It was a beautiful apartment. And so Prabhupada stayed there, and three of us went with Srila Prabhupada to stay with him: Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhavananda Maharaj, and myself. And Prabhupada used to give the programs every evening in Cross Maidan. There were thousands of people used to attend. And one very wonderful incident that I remember from that was one day Srila Prabhupada noticed that in the crowd there was one Arab gentleman. He was just standing there. Prabhupada noticed that, and he sent one of his sannyasi disciples to bring him up onto the stage. And on the stage, Prabhupada was sitting on his vasasana, and there were two rows of chairs on both sides of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was sitting in the center and flanked by rows of chairs on both sides. And Prabhupada made him sit next to him in a chair. And this person was dressed in a typical Arab attire. As you know, like, they have this long dress, and then they have this white thing on their head, and with a round kind of a, whatever you call it. So here is the spirit one, Swami, surrounded by his disciples, sitting, giving a program from the main stage. And just next to him is a Muslim gentleman from Saudi Arabia. Not Saudi Arabia, he was actually from Kuwait. And Prabhupada had some very, very wonderful exchange with him. He was speaking to him so nicely. And it turned out that that gentleman was actually the chief of police from Kuwait. And he just came to Bombay to have some treatment and or some operation maybe, I don't remember. And that was the first time he was allowed to go out of the hospital for a walk. And he was, he just came out and came to this park and he saw this big gathering. So out of curiosity, he just came to see what was happening. And he was just standing there and seeing what was going on. And here Srila Prabhupada invites him onto the main stage and make him sit next to him. And Prabhupada was telling him, he saw that he had a kind of a bead in his hand. Often the Muslims carry a kind of a bead. So he asked him, oh, you also have, what do you do with that? So he just said, I just fiddle around with this. And the Prabhupada said, no, that's actually meant to chant the holy name of the Lord. It's a bead to keep count of how many times you are chanting the name of the Lord. And Prabhupada pulled out his bead. He said, see, I also have one. So Prabhupada showed him his bead and explained that how this bead is sacred, and that's why it should be kept in a bag, so that it doesn't touch any, it can, doesn't become contaminated by any dirty thing. So this is how magnanimous and broad-minded Srila Prabhupada was. Whenever there was an opportunity to preach, Srila Prabhupada took that opportunity. So it's already 6:15, so I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
So we'd just like to mention for the devotees' benefit, we're serving prasadam outside. You can eat either inside or outside. We encourage taking prasad outside unless it begins to rain so that we can keep the temple clean. And that at 7 o'clock, we will be showing the chapati video. So please be sure to come back in for that. Thank you very much.
So why does that happen?